Greetings once again. McBurney here. And you may have heard about the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. Welcome back aboard the good ship as we try to ride out the crest of the wave high atop the cataclysm as it unfolds here. The cataclysm brought to us by the enemies of Western civilization, the God-haters, and the heathens, and the humanists and the socialists everywhere. They're all around us. But there is one of them who will never be the Democrat nominee for the President of the United States. Now, you know here at the Worldview that we generally cover topics of much greater import than who's going to be the next humanist to occupy the White House. But we like to have a little bit of fun with that kind of stuff, too. Okay? And so we're going to start here with a report that never would have happened in 1991. It never would have occurred. But it happened just this past week in the mainstream liberal humanist socialist press from The Economist, which is a British, well, it's considered conservative, I suppose, but it's a humanist newspaper, primarily about money, I think. Money and wealth and things like that. And they're reporting on the 2016, well, I guess the outlook for the 2016 presidential election here across the pond in America. And they're reporting on Hillary Clinton. They're reporting on Hillary Clinton, he said. And here's what they say. She appeared in Iowa at the Great Harkin Steak Fry, which is hosted by Democrat Senator Tom Harkin. And it's a bellwether as to which Democrats are stabbing each other in the back for a shot at the White House. And Hillary was there. The Economist reports that Mrs. Clinton posed for the cameras, pretending to grill a steak that had been pre-cooked for her. The headline is Hillary Clinton, World Champion Pretend Griller. Now, in 1991, when Bill Clinton was running for President of the United States, this never would have appeared in the media. Nothing even questioning the piety and the worthiness of the Clintons for the White House would have ever been printed. And now they call her a world champion pretend griller, and they out the fact that she didn't even grill the steak herself. It was all staged. That's The Economist. So Hillary Clinton will never be the nominee. Never. She stabbed too many people in the back. She ruined too many careers. She destroyed too many marriages and too many psyches as she clawed her way to the top, chewing up and spitting out the little people all along the way. And now it's their chance to get even with her, and it will be fun to watch. Since it's all really just a game. It's a shell game as we, you know, switch humanists in the White House every few years. It's all, they're all from cut from the same cloth. But it can be entertaining to watch sometimes. And it will be entertaining to watch Hillary Clinton be destroyed by the people who helped elect her husband as she gets her due comeuppance in the 2016 election cycle. You know the prediction here at the Worldview. Yeah, that the Democrat nominee, barring the appearance of some unforeseen dark horse candidate. Can you even say that anymore? Dark horse? After Barry came along? Can you say dark horse?
Isn't he dark?
Well, he would have been called a dark horse candidate, but you couldn't say that because, well, you know, he's a black fellow, and we certainly don't want to offend any black people. I mean African Americans. Anyway, the nominee, barring the appearance of an as-yet unforeseen dark horse candidate, whether black, white, yellow, or red, is there anybody I missed? Jewish? Native American? Anyway, barring a dark horse candidate, the nominee will be Elizabeth Warren, also known as Senator Sitting Bull. I'm sorry, Senator Spewing Bull, Elizabeth Warren. She'll be the nominee of the Democrats, not Hillary Clinton. And all the little people who ended up with backwater bureaucrat jobs in their home states when they thought they'd be invited to Washington to join the Clintons, all those people, they're sharpening their knives right now. and they'll be very happy to see Senator Spewing Bull as the nominee rather than Hillary Clinton. All right. Now, here's another reason Hillary Clinton may not get the Democrat nomination. This is from the Politics File. As reported at thedailysignal.com, a former State Department diplomat, the Deputy Assistant Secretary Raymond Maxwell. How many layers of bureaucracy is there over at the State Department? This guy's not just a secretary. He's not just an assistant secretary. He's a deputy assistant secretary. Isn't that like deputy assistant secretary to the traveling manager? Anyway, just ridiculous. But this deputy assistant, Raymond Maxwell, he was the leader in the State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs, which was charged with collecting documents, emails, relevant to the Benghazi probe. Well, Maxwell, if you remember, Maxwell was one of four State Department officials who ended up being disciplined. They were accused of security lapses, you remember? And they were, he says he was scapegoated. There was going to be a prosecution, but they were later cleared. And after all the smoke cleared in Benghazi and all the bodies were dragged out of the consulate, nobody got in any trouble. He says that there occurred a weekend document session that was held in the basement of the State Department's Foggy Bottom headquarters, where he says there was an active operation to separate damaging documents before they were turned over to the Accountability Review Board investigating Benghazi. What? Hidden documents? No way! The Clintons? That's impossible. Anyway, Maxwell, just in case you doubt his bona fides as a genuine orchestrator of the cataclysm, he personally contributed to Barry Obama's presidential campaign. He says he was a strong supporter of Barack Obama. As well, you might expect, he got hired by the guy. Anyway, so that's another reason Hillary may never get the nomination, is that she actively tried to cover up her bungling and incompetence that led to the death of four Americans in Benghazi, including the ambassador, by the way. So that could be problematic for Hill, not to mention the people who were actually killed and the families who've been devastated by what happened in Benghazi. Now, but Barry Obama, he realizes what is upon us, and he is prepared now finally to make war. That's right, from CNN.com, Barry says the United States is ready to take on the leadership role that it must against Ebola. Yep, Ebola. Listen to what Barry says about Ebola. He says, here's the hard truth. In West Africa, Ebola is now an epidemic. Did I say epidemic? Here's what Barry says. He says, here's the hard truth. In West Africa, Ebola is now an epidemic of the likes that we have not seen before. Unquote. An epidemic the likes of which we've not seen before. Barry, what about the plague? Like a third of Europe was killed. Ebola's killed about 2,500 people. Hey, I'm not saying it's not serious. I'm just saying we've seen stuff like this before, Barry. But we've never seen a president in this much political trouble before reaching out to a virus for help. Reaching desperately. He'll take even a virus. He'll do it. So he's declared war on Ebola. And he gave a long speech. I marked it all up, but I don't really want to go through all this because we know it's Barry. But at the end, he said, we can't dawdle on this one. We can't dawdle, he said. Because he's been dawdling on everything else, and he knows that now it's obvious. So he's making an effort now to declare war on Ebola. Meanwhile, another war that Barry has been involved in. Well, we've all been involved in it. We've all taken part. We've all contributed our blood, sweat, and tears to the war on poverty. Right? We remember the war on poverty. Lyndon Baines Johnson, in the mid-1960s, declared war on poverty. And I guess this is some kind of... This year marks the 50th anniversary of President Johnson's launch of the war on poverty. So that must have been somewhere around 1964. When the first troops landed on the beach of poverty and began to inflict casualties upon the enemy, it's been 50 years, and according to this article from the Daily Signal, did I have two articles from the Daily Signal? How does that happen? The Daily Signal, I never even heard of them before. And I got the Clinton story, you know, the hiding of the documents, the throwing, the burning, the shredding of documents that made Hillary look like, you know, she was asleep when that 3 a.m. phone call came through. You remember the one from her ad campaign back? Yeah. Well, that phone call actually came, apparently. And Hillary was otherwise engaged. But back to the Daily Signal for a report on the war on poverty. Apparently, since 1964, American taxpayers have spent $22 trillion. That's trillion with a T, which is a... How much? Well, a million is a thousand thousand, right? And a billion is a thousand million. And a trillion is a thousand billion. So it's a lot. $22 trillion we've spent on the war on poverty. And the Daily Signal declares that the war on poverty has been a colossal flop. Yep. The federal government in America currently runs more than 80 means-tested welfare programs to provide cash, food, housing, and medical care to just about everybody. Almost everybody. Almost every family in America receives some sort of government largesse at this point. About a third of the population received aid from the government in 2013. If converted to cash, the current means-tested spending is five times the amount needed to eliminate all poverty in the United States. We could just hand everybody a check. Well, not that I think that's an option, but the folks here at the Daily Signal are just trying to make a point, I think. Anyway, in 1967, about 14% of Americans were poor. In 2013, about 14% of Americans are poor. And we spent $22 trillion. But hey, we've greased a lot of politicians with that money. And there's been a lot of fat retirements built upon that money. And so it's been a success to a certain degree, at least for the politicians who've administered it. They came to do good, and they've done very well indeed, as a matter of fact. Have you seen the price of a house in Georgetown, for crying out loud? Yeah. So the Daily Signal asks the question, how is this possible? How can the taxpayers spend $22 trillion on welfare while poverty gets worse? What we need to do, we should restructure the welfare state. I've got an idea. Let's restructure it. Hey, I'm a Republican. Let me run that program. I've got cousins and nephews and nieces, and I got people I can hire. Yep, they say we should restructure the welfare state. Big new ideas. Yeah, from the humanist right. They say restructure, we should require, able-bodied people who are receiving cash, food, and housing. Is there anything more you need in life? Cash, food, and housing? That pretty much covers it. Well, the humanist right, writing over at the Daily Signal, I'm not sure who the author is on this. I'm sure he's some neoconservative, bow-tie-wearing Republican. He says the able-bodied should be required to work or prepare for work. And the penalties against marriage should be reduced. We don't want to eliminate anything. We have the same philosophy as the leftist socialist humanists, but we'd like to spend less money doing it so that you could keep more of your money and donate to our political campaigns. But we'd still like to hire our cousins and nephews and mistresses, and, you know, we still have, you know, we don't want to overthrow the apple cart altogether. So they should be required to work, repair, penalties against marriage should be reduced, and we should return to the original vision that Johnson had back in 1964 to replace their despair, replace the people's despair with opportunity. So this is the problem. And this is why we're headed headlong into a catastrophe of biblical proportions in all throughout Western civilization. And that's why Muhammad is crouching at the door, ready to pounce, is because we've got the rabid leftists, homosexualist perverts, socialists, communists, that sort, on one side, bringing everything down. And from the right, we've got the new right humanists who just want to restructure it, remanage it, and pump the money through their friends. And that's why we're not going to make it past the crest of the wave of the giant calamity that's coming down upon us. But I hope you'll join the worldview as we at least enjoy the view. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Robert, put that sequencer away. That upset a lot of people when he went with the whole... It's almost like a disco feel. Really weird. It was bad. I liked it, though, after a while. All right, now speaking... Why can we enjoy the view? Yeah, we're not just laughing at it or mocking it. No, we're doing something about it in our own family, in our own circle, in our own sphere of influence, so to speak. We're doing what we can to preserve the fabric and all of that. But the enemies of what is good and just and righteous and holy and lovely and true, well, they're running the place. And there's no better proof than this story right here. Well, the last story, the war on poverty, it's the Republicans and the Democrats. And nowhere in the story, by the way, do they talk about the immorality of stealing people's money and giving it to lazy people or any other people? There's nothing in the story about the immorality of the government destroying the lives of people and the motivation of people by getting them hooked on welfare, the government becoming the great welfare drug dealer and destroying people's lives. Destroying the lives of men, women, and children. That's nowhere appears in the article. It's all about how much money it cost us and how we should reconstruct it. Restructure it, I should say. Yeah, restructure it. But well, we take the long view here. We're focused on our own family, like the liberal bumper sticker says. Okay, fine. We will focus on our own family. But the humanists are in control. And the unfortunate thing about humanism is that in the end, it leads ultimately to you standing in the mirror looking at yourself and wondering if you can save yourself and realizing that you can't. And then you lose heart, which is about where Western civilization is at this point. Story here from Jihad Watch. If you want to know how bad it is and how we have no longer any good guys in the government, or at least not enough to make a difference, here's Jihad Watch reports that Breitbart reported last week that the U.S.-backed Free Syrian Army, the Al-Nusra Front, and the Islamic State are working together to fight President Bashar al-Assad's Syrian armed forces. Yes, that's right. We're giving guns to the Free Syrian Army, and they're aligned with the Al-Nusra Front and the Islamic State. That's ISIS. That's the beheadings, all that. The caliphate, that's them. And... Well, they paired together to fight Assad. That's according to statements from multiple commanders from within the Free Syrian Army. Here's a quote from a Free Syrian Army commander. We are collaborating with the Islamic State and the Nusra Front by attacking the Syrian army's gatherings in Kulamalamolemun. Some city there. Yeah, that's according to, well, I don't want to give his name, but he's a commander of the Free Syrian Army Brigade. That's like the friends of John McCain. Right? The ones he took pictures with? Jihad Watch goes on to report that in July of 2013, Free Syrian Army fighters entered the Christian village of Om Sharsho and began burning down houses and terrorizing the population, forcing 250 Christian families to flee the area. 2 days later, Free Syrian Army rebels, these are the folks that you and me and John McCain are sending guns, the Free Syrian Army rebels targeted the residents of a Christian village close to the city of Homs and near Syria's border with Lebanon. Around 350 armed Muslim militants forcefully entered the homes of Christian families who were all rounded up in the main square of the village and summarily executed. 350 militants just started executing Christians. And back in September 2013, the FSA, that's the Free Syrian Army, took to the internet to post videos of its attack on the ancient Syrian city of Ma'alula, a Christian city, one of the few places where Aramaic, the language spoken by Jesus Christ, is still spoken today. Jihad Watch closes the report with a simple sentence. These are the moderates we are arming. So we're farming out our foreign policy once again to Muslims and Arabs, and that is inherently dangerous and foolish. If you want to kill people and conquer a country, you have to do it yourself. That's all there is to it. You can't farm that out to other people. Now, I'm not saying we couldn't work with allies to do it, but we need to be in charge, and the boots on the ground need to be strapped onto American lieutenant colonels. Not to put too fine a point on it, but that's what we need. All right, now let's go to one of our other allies in the Middle East who we're hoping will fund the war against ISIS, even though I think they funded ISIS. We'll get around to that. The Daily Mail reports that Islamist police in Saudi Arabia have arrested an entire prayer meeting congregation, Christian, and confiscated their Bibles. Yep, the Daily Mail says this is just the latest incident of a large-scale crackdown on religious minorities in Saudi Arabia by the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice. With that, the problem is here that the Saudi Arabian Sunni government considers Christianity a vice, punishable by death. Yeah, 28 Christians were worshiping in the home of an Indian national while they were picked up by the police, and they haven't been heard from nor seen since, at last report. Let's see, more. Though the Daily Mail reminds us that Saudi Arabia is the only nation state in the world with an official policy banning all Christian churches. You cannot build one, you cannot have one. And if we think you're making your home into one, we will come and arrest you. 28 Christians disappeared. Now, they remind us also that over 2 million Christian foreign workers work in the country of Saudi Arabia, which just proves that the Saudi Arabians really aren't all that pious even about their own beliefs, because they're willing to bring the infidels in to give them engineering advice and help them pump out the oil. But they are not willing to let them build churches and flourish. Activists are calling on the U.S., according to the Daily Mail. They're calling on the U.S. to use its considerable influence to secure the release of the incarcerated Christians. Oh, yeah, right. Haven't you noticed all the incarcerated Christians that the American government has not helped? Yeah, you can't swing a dead cat these days without hitting a Christian that the American government has abandoned. The Saudi government claims it has no knowledge of the arrests. Low-level operation there at the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Christianity and Vice, which they consider a vice. They say they had no knowledge. Several Saudi Arabic language news outlets have reported on the arrests. So we have several independent sources, disinterested sources, that report that this mass arrest, in fact, did happen, and the Christians are missing. And the Daily Mail reminds us that in Saudi Arabia, it is against the law for Muslims to abandon their faith, and proselytizing for other religions or practicing them openly is also illegal. These are the guys who are going to help us in the war to stop the caliphate. Okay? They use our F-16s, and they're going to help us. We're safe from ISIS because we have friends in Saudi Arabia. And, well, we have friends in Syria, too, in the al-Nusra Front and the Free Syrian Army. They'll get it done for us. Meanwhile, some other alleged allies in the war against the caliphate, Turkey, this is a report from the Telegraph. The Turkish government rescued 49 hostages captured by the Islamic State. Turkey's official news agency reports that no ransom had been paid for the release of the hostages and that no conditions were accepted in return for their release. Okay, I'm not buying that. No. According to the Telegraph, there is widespread speculation as to how Ankara managed to orchestrate the release. The fate of previous captives at the hands of the Islamic State, ISIS, ISIL, call it what you will. The fate of previous captives has ranged from crucifixion and decapitation to being shot in the head and buried in mass graves. But somehow Turkey gets 49 of them released. And the only question I have is, how did they manage to negotiate a release? Did they agree not to join the American coalition against the caliphate? Or did they just skip step two and just join the caliphate directly, perhaps? Well, we'll find out. Turkey is not to be trusted. They're no friends of ours when it comes to Islamism. I'm sorry. By the way, the average Muslim has reacted to the maniacal killing that Islamists have undertaken in the past 15 years tells me that when it comes down to knuckle-cracking time, that the Muslims are going to side with the Islamists against us. All of our friends, they're going to side with the maniac headcutters over Western civilization. And they look at Western civilization, the perversion and the corruption, and they look at the myth of Muslim purity, and they are going to choose the myth of Muslim purity over us because we're so pathetic. And then the sad thing is we all get our heads chopped off. The moderate Muslims, the Western, the humanists, the homosexuals, the Christians, we all end up with our heads chopped off if the Islamic State is allowed to continue and eventually achieve victory, which I believe they will if they're not stopped with extreme prejudice, by the way. Extreme prejudice. All right, finally, we come into the culture file with just another milestone along the road to the caliphate. From the Washington Times, members of the U.S. Air Force will no longer be required to say, "So help me God," during their enlistment oath. Now, I'm not big on oaths. Bible says don't take an oath. But the fact that the name of God has been eliminated from yet another cultural activity, whether it be an oath or whatever, it's just another sign that we have lost touch with our heritage, our Christian heritage, and we've lost touch with the living God. We've turned our back on God as a nation, at least our governing officials have. And this is just another indication. You can't mention God when you're signing up for the Air Force at the graduation, say, you know. Anyway, apparently, the ruling against the phrase, "So help me God," occurred after the American Humanist Association threatened to sue on behalf of some atheists down there at the Air Force Academy. So can you believe this, that the Air Force Academy here in Colorado Springs is well known as a bastion of overt Christian proselytizing, and it has been for many years. But the fact that the American Humanist Association just threatens to sue the Air Force, and the Air Force capitulates, I mean, come on, the Air Force, you've got lawyers on staff, what are they doing? Sitting around, drinking coffee? Let's get them working against the American Humanist Association. Let's take them to court if they threaten to sue us. But just the threat of the suit, and the Air Force abandons the name of God in the face of the humanist lawyers who are hell-bent on killing us all. Worldview. I am your host, McBurney, coming to you from deep inside the bowels of the McBurney compound, behind the moat with the bridges up. And all the girls are behind the barricades here as the culture continues to collapse in upon us. We do our best to hold it up. Here's another milestone along the road, the highway to hell. From the Culture File, CBS in Washington reports that Robert Griffin III, who is apparently a football player for the Washington Redskins, a quarterback no less, Robert Griffin III was reportedly told by an NFL uniform inspector not to wear his shirt with the phrase, "No Jesus, No Peace," on it. It was a T-shirt, said, "No Jesus, No Peace," and they told him not to wear it, and he turned it inside out. Yeah. A reporter for the Richmond Times posted on Twitter that Griffin was told he couldn't wear the T-shirt because it wasn't a Nike product, but nobody's buying that. Because football players, just recently a Redskins linebacker wore a T-shirt from another clothing company to the podium, but it didn't have anything about Jesus on it, and nobody even noticed it. Nobody told him to change his shirt or take it off. But when it comes to no Jesus, no peace, Robert Griffin III was told no. On game day, the NFL says, players are prohibited from wearing personal messages unless they're approved in advance by the league office. And the one thing that the NFL league office does not approve of, and that's Jesus.
The devil says,
blue 42, blue 42, hut. Yep, the devil plays for the NFL. No, the devil doesn't play for the NFL. The devil's in the home office there at the NFL. Somebody said NFL stands for the No Faith League. Yeah. Anyway, that's just disgusting. With everything that's going on with the players in the NFL, with the drugs and the beating up of the women and the drunkenness and the DUIs and all that stuff, you think the NFL would make a little bit more room for Jesus, who can help restrain these are young men hopped up on testosterone and steroids and amphetamines. Well, that's what the NFL is, testosterone, amphetamines, and steroids. And if you don't mix in some religious restraint on these guys, well, you see what's happening this year in the NFL. It's embarrassing and disgusting. I don't watch it anymore myself. I consider them all to be circus freaks at this point, and I don't allow that kind of garbage into my house. You can't watch sports anyways on TV if you got kids in the house, because the commercials are pornographic, for crying out loud. It's like I'm living in a Clockwork Orange and trying to raise kids. Speaking of all that, let's move into the government school file where we have, well, oh boy, it's pretty thick this week. We'll start out with reason number 811 to keep or get your kids out of the government schools. These are in no particular order, so just bear with me on these. This is from WorldNet Daily. The Satanic Temple of New York City has reared its ugly head again. It's been granted permission to pass out its literature to students in public schools in the Orlando, Florida area. So Satanists will be handing out stuff to your kids very soon. Although, I mean, if you looked at the curricula that the teachers have been giving your kids for the last 45 years, that's been fairly satanic in my book. I mean, when you say you're letting Satanists into the public schools, isn't that somewhat redundant? Yeah, they're already teaching there. They're already administering the curricula, for crying out loud.
The devil says.
He's back! Now he goes from the NFL to the government. Let's hear him. What does he say? What does he say? Well, we can't tell what he says. Nobody has any idea what any of those lyrics were at the time. Nobody knew. I never knew. No clue what they were. Anyway, where was I? Oh, the effort by the Satanists to distribute literature at the government schools, it follows an effort, a decision by the school to allow the distribution of Bibles and atheist materials as well. You see, the school administrators, thinking that they're being brave and promoters of liberty, they said, well, let's let the Christians come in with their Bibles and we'll let the atheists in too. We're practically like Thomas Jefferson. We're so smart. So they allow the Bibles in, but only with atheist materials, and now the Satanists jump on board. I'm sorry. I don't want my kids to have equal access to wickedness and evil. I'd like them to know what's good and lovely and righteous and helpful and edifying. I don't want them to know about Satanism and atheism, okay? I mean, they're going to find out enough about that down the road anyways. They're going to run into all that. They're going to have to decide. They're going to have to make a decision for themselves. But as long as I'm responsible, I'd prefer that they're not exposed to Satanists or atheists. Stay away. I don't want any of your literature. No, I'm not all about liberty, and my name is not Thomas Jefferson. All right. The spokesman for the Satanists, Lucian Greaves. What's your name, Mr. Satanist? Lucian. Is that your real name, Lucian? Well, not really. I tattooed that on my back when I was 13 because I hated my mom. That's Lucian Greaves. He's the spokesman. He says that what the Satanists want to do is ensure that the students are given access to a variety of differing religious opinions and propaganda. And so he's doing exactly what he believes in. He's giving equal time to the devil. He should work at Fox News. Fair and balanced. We'll give you God's side of the story, but we'll give equal time to the devil. And then you decide. What else here? Lucian says this might be the first exposure the children have to the actual practice of Satanism. Well, I doubt that if they've been in the government schools for any reasonable amount of times. But Lucian says that he thinks many students will be very curious to see what Satanism has to offer. That's absolutely true, Lucian. They would be very curious, which is why a millstone should be hung around your neck, and you should be thrown into the deepest part of the sea. You evil bastard. These people in Orlando, and the school board are going to let I have to restrain myself. They're going to let this person into their school to hand out. Unbelievable. The book they're going to be handing out, by the way, Lucian will be handing out the Satanic Children's Big Book of Activities. They don't go into what kind of activities there are in the book, but even if they did, we probably wouldn't go into them here on the show. So we don't want to give them any promotion here. The school district recently banned chaplains from high school football games to avoid any litigation from... Yeah, okay. So you can't say the Lord's Prayer before a football game, but you're going to let Satanists and atheists come in and hand out literature. And then you're going to hide... The school board is going to hide behind the fact that they said, well, we let the Bibles in too. We're just trying to be fair to everybody. All right. So that was reason number 811. We now go to eagnews.org. For reason number 806, to keep or get your kids out of government schools, Sand Creek High School in Colorado Springs, Colorado, has elected a transgender female as the homecoming princess. Now, I know you may ask, well, what is a transgender female? Well, that leaves, there's some confusion. It could be a boy who's dressing and acting like a girl. It could be a girl who's dressing and acting like a boy. The term transgendered female automatically leaves some doubt in the minds of everyone who hears it. Well, in this case, Scarlett was born Andy. Does that help? Scarlett was born Andy, and he began identifying himself as a girl just this school year. That's right, he's 16 years old, and he started wearing girls' clothing, and as soon as he found out that he'd be allowed to use the female bathroom at Sand Creek High School earlier this school year. So he wants to use the, he'd like to meet more girls, so he puts on girls' clothes, he goes into the girls' bathroom. He's been using the school the girls' bathroom since school started just a few weeks ago. Many of the kids at the school say they thought this was a joke. They didn't think he'd be nominated. One grandparent of a hapless public school student there, the grandparent says, "This is craziness," says grandma, as she shuttles her kid off to a place where the boys can use the girls' bathroom. "Grandma, who are you calling crazy? You know, you might want to have a test of your own, Grandma. I think I'm seeing some early signs of dementia here. Letting your grandkids go to a school like..." Anyway, one student says that originally it was a joke. We were all going to nominate him for Homecoming Princess, but he ended up getting a lot of nominations. And now there are a lot of upset girls because one of the spots in the Homecoming... what do they call it? I can't remember. It's been a long, long time. They call it something. It's the king and the queen and the prince and the prince. Anyway, the homecoming court. That's it. There are a lot of girls who are actually girls are upset because one of the spots on the court was taken by this pervert. And one hapless student, a junior there at Sand Creek, she said, "I think it's like wrong because he's actually a guy. He's not a girl." Said a girl. Another student there said that the tranny only informed his parents of her new gender last week. Listen to the reporters at EAG News. They're already calling this guy her. Just out of deference, right, to the tranny. I mean, I guess you can't, if someone says they're a girl just because they want to go in the girl's bathroom, and they're actually just a teenage boy who wants to go in the girl's bathroom, we have to call her because we have to be respectful of people's sexual identity. Anyway, the tranny says, "My mom didn't like it, but she wants to support me for what I do in life." Well, believe me, she probably will end up supporting you for everything you do in life, more than likely. You confused, mentally deranged, or maybe just a crafty little pervert who wants to get in the girl's bathroom. That could be. I mean, he's 16 years old. Don't put it past a 16-year-old boy to do whatever it takes to get closer to 16-year-old girls, okay? Let's see, do we have anything more? Oh, this is the second such incident in the Colorado Springs area. In June of 2013, a transgendered first grader who was born a boy won the right to use the girls' restroom at Eagleside Elementary School in Fountain.
A first grade.
I think we reported on this. Yeah, I think we said that his parents should be arrested. Anyway, so we started with reason 806 and we stumbled across reason 807, but it could have already been listed back in the 600s, somewhere around 666, possibly, the transgendered first grader. Reasons to keep or get your kids out of the government schools. We move on now to reason number 810. Houston, Texas, an HIV positive music teacher was working in the McKinney, Texas government school system. Well, a 15-year-old boy's parents initially called police when they thought a robber was leaving their home, but they found out that it was actually this HIV-positive music teacher who had been visiting their son at their house without them being at home. The son was 15 years old. The HIV-positive music teacher is 43-year-old Roger Kessler. The parents saw Kessler leaving their house. Kessler told authorities that he had molested this 15-year-old boy about four times. Don't worry, don't get too upset. Kessler, the HIV-positive music teacher, has been placed on administrative leave. The 15-year-old says he had no knowledge that the teacher was HIV-positive, but now he is acutely aware of that fact. fighting against the monsters and the bad guys out there. That's right. Reason number 810. Your child might be molested by an HIV-positive music teacher. And we move right from that to reason number 808. These are in no particular order. Your child may be run over by an up-armored vehicle or exposed to a grenade launcher. That's right. Los Angeles Unified School District has acquired a 20-foot-long, 14-ton armored transport vehicle. Yes, it's... They got it from the government for free, according to CBS in Los Angeles, and the government paid $750,000 for it. Now, the article says it's worth $733,000. I would take issue with that. That's just what the government paid for it. That doesn't mean... Yeah, you know what it's actually worth? It's worth... Well, they gave it to the school for free, so that's its current value, is nothing. I'm sure it has, scrap value. But they've got an up-armored vehicle that was formerly used to move Marines in Iraq through combat zones. They have that at the L.A. Unified School District, according to the school district police chief, Steve Zipperman. Now, if your school district has its own police chief, that could be a sign that maybe you don't want to send your kids there, too, along with the up-armored vehicles. Now, they also have grenade launchers. But they say the grenade launchers have never been used, at least not yet. They haven't used any of them. The chief of police there at the school district says the armored vehicle will only be deployed with the approval of the school superintendent. Anyway, what more can you say about that? Well, you know, the war's over. We've got an awful lot of gear and army surplus, we used to call it, right? And so why not just send the automatic weapons, grenade launchers, and armored vehicles where they're most likely to be needed next? And that's in the schools, where we're raising a generation and teaching them that they evolved from animals, that there is no objective right and wrong, and that ethics are situational, and that the strong survive. Survival of the fittest and all of that. So we might need grenade launchers. Who knows? But I wouldn't send my kids there, and I don't advise you do it either. Now, meanwhile, moving into the personhood file, Republican Bob Beaupre is running for governor of Colorado. So this hit me, I mean, like a cold splash of water in the face. I was like, what? Bob Beaupre is running for governor? I live in Colorado, and I didn't even know it. I didn't know Bob Beaupre was running for governor. Now, I typically keep up with conservative politics, which is probably why I didn't notice that Bob Beaupre was running for governor, because there's no conservative in the race, so I just haven't been following it. He's running against John Hickenlooper, avowed friend of Barry. He's golfed with Barry, he's shot pool with Barry, and he has drank beer with Barry on camera. In fact, he was drinking beer with Barry on camera when the whole border crisis erupted, with the children with the dirty faces and the raggedy clothes coming across the border. When all that first broke, Barry and Hickenlooper were sitting up in a bar having a beer, shooting a game of pool. And Hickenlooper's running for governor again, and a fella named Bob Beaupre, who is a Republican, is running against him. And he was asked a question recently about whether or not he respected a woman's right to choose an abortion. And that's the way the humanist left asks that question. Do you respect a woman's right to choose an abortion? Which that violates at least 1 to 5 rules of the laws of logic when you ask a question in a debate or trying to get to the truth. That question is just loaded with all kinds of problems. But we're going to leave that aside, because we know what the leftist reporter wanted to get at. Where do you stand on abortion? Is what he could have asked Beaupre, but that wouldn't have been convoluted enough for a modern urinalist school graduate. He asked if the Beaupre was asked if he would take away access to birth control. Beaupre answered, "Nobody's talking that way. That's a false argument. Abortion is the law of the land." Now, some, like me, are personally pro-life, but I'm not going to deny what the law provides you, unquote, he said. Apparently, thinking that he's talking to women. So there's something about politicians, whether they're Republican or Democrat, they all assume that the vast majority of women are only concerned about aborting their children. That's their main thing. And birth control pills. I mean, isn't that insulting to women for politicians to assume that their whole life and their whole political worldview revolves around abortion and birth control pills? If I were a woman, I would be offended, okay? That's all. Anyway, what else does Beaupre have to say? He says, I don't want to make your choices in who you murder, and I don't think the conservatives do. I don't want to make choices about who you... Oh, I'm sorry. He said, I don't want to make your choices in health care, and I don't think conservatives do. The law is pretty clear, says Bob Beaupre. Asked about the question after the event, the Republican added. Now, he was asked about personhood, I believe. Don't they get to personhood? He said he opposes abortion. Oh, I see. Back in 06, Beaupre, he ran for governor back then, said he opposed abortion even in cases of rape and incest, with his only exception being the mother's life. Well, asked about the question after the event, here's what Beaupre had to say. This is why Beaupre will lose. Only Beaupre could lose to Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper is so unpopular right now, and he's viewed as a rather feckless and spineless little weasel. But Beaupre will probably lose by alienating his conservative base, right along with the other hapless loser, Cory Gardner. Although I will admit, Beaupre has a better chance than Gardner, just because of who Hickenlooper is and because who Cory Gardner isn't, because nobody knows who Cory Gardner is anymore. Anyway, he was asked about the issue of abortion after the event. Beaupre said, well, the governor has very limited impact on what's really the federal law. Democrats always bring it up because they don't want to talk about the economy or education or transportation. Those are the things I'm really big on. I don't know where it's an issue in this campaign. Abortion's only the biggest political issue in American history since slavery, Mr. Beaupre. And it is in every election. And for you to stand there and say that what we really care about is the economy, education, transportation, you're lying to yourself, you stupid fool. What else he says? He was asked specifically about Amendment 67 on the Colorado ballot this coming November, which would add unborn children to the protections of the criminal code. It would basically define the term person would include unborn children in the criminal code and the various laws against wrongful death. So he was asked specifically about 67, and he snapped, I'm opposed to that. I don't think that moves the needle forward. I am a fan of protecting what I define as innocent life, but this is not the way to do it, said Bob Beaupre. So Bob Beaupre has thrown the conservatives under the bus. He's thrown the children of the living God who are threatened with abortion under the bus because he thinks it'll help him attract pro-abortion voters. That's right. All the girls clamoring for their birth control pills, Beaupre thinks he can appeal to them. And so does Cory Gardner, and they're idiots. Beaupre said in his 06 campaign that he supported an amendment to the U.S. Constitution giving full protection to unborn babies. But the candidate makes the distinction between federal and state laws. He says he supports federal personhood legislation, but not state legislation, and thereby we know that Mr. Beaupre is lying. He's just lying. And he'll lie to you to get your vote. He'll lie to me to get my vote. He's just like Cory Gardner. He'll lie to whoever he has to lie to get the vote. And then when he gets in office, we know what he'll do. He'll be a tool of whoever can help him move to his next political goal. So that's what Gardner is. That's what Beaupre is. And that's why the Republicans are in the wilderness in Colorado. The Republican Party was destroyed by that hapless, I can't even remember his name, that fat, empty suit moron who ran the Republican Party in the 90s and the early 2000s. Fat loser moron lost, destroyed the Republican Party. Now Karl Rove has been called in to finish him off. Karl Rove coming in to shoot the wounded. Anyone left in the Republican Party, Karl Rove will make short work of them. Don't you worry. All right. So that's it for the personhood file. By the way, we encourage you to vote yes on 67 here at the McBurney Compound if you live in Colorado. Please join us in voting yes. So we move on to the science, really, file. Yes, this is real science. Doctors believed that a 34-year-old Canadian man had been left entirely unresponsive and in a vegetative state after suffering a cardiac arrest 16 years ago. But scans taken while the patient was shown an Alfred Hitchcock movie revealed brain activity linked to feelings of anticipation and excitement. That's right. The brain patterns of this supposedly vegetative patient, the brain patterns resembled that of healthy participants, suggesting not only that the patient was consciously aware, but that he also understood the film. This is amazing. One of the scientists involved, a researcher at the University of Western Ontario in Canada, said, "For the first time, we show that a patient with unknown levels of consciousness can monitor and analyze information from their environment in the same way as healthy individuals." This news should be shocking the medical community. It should be rocking the world of medicine. This is amazing. The scientist reports that we already know that up to 1 in 5 of these patients are misdiagnosed as permanently vegetative or as being unconscious. And this new technique may reveal that number is even higher. These are people like Terry Schiavo, who everyone was so ready to kill. Unbelievable. Last year, one of the professors on the team was able to communicate with a patient who was thought to be in a vegetative state for the past 12 years. So here's the thing, folks. Whether it comes to someone who's very, very sick and unresponsive, but they're alive, or it comes to someone who is in the womb and totally helpless, we need to err on the side of compassion, always. And we have to assume that these people are just that. They're people. And we need to treat them with the respect that every human being deserves because they are a person made in the image of the living God who is not slack in looking after those who cannot look after themselves. Meaning that if we, as individuals and as a civilization, become callous toward the plight of the innocent and the helpless and the defenseless and the sick and the unloved and the unwanted, and we decide that it's okay just to kill them for convenience sake, that rest assured God will visit that wickedness upon our heads if we choose to go that way, and that's the way we've gone, and that's where we are, and that's who we are. We are a culture drenched in bloodshed and murder every day. Sometimes it's in the shadows, sometimes it's in the hospice, sometimes it's in the abortion clinic, sometimes it's in the hospital. Most of the time, it's in the shadows, and it's not in broad daylight public view. But on a regular basis, it explodes into the public view. I've got a report here from Fox News. A grandfather shot and killed his daughter and her 6 children last Thursday in the town of Bell, Florida. He then committed suicide. The children ranged in age from 3 months to 10 years old. The grandfather has been identified as 51-year-old Don C. Spirit. The victims are Alana Stewart, 3 months old, Brandon Stewart, 4 years old, Destiny Stewart, 5 years old, Jonathan Kuhlman, 8 years old, Kylie Kuhlman, 9 years old, Caleb Kuhlman, 11 years old, and the mother, Sarah Lorraine Spirit, 28 years old. Nothing more to say about that. The Domestic Tranquility Front, we go over to Germany. This was reported in the Philadelphia News. The baby born to a woman who was fatally shot by a stray bullet in Frankfurt on last Sunday has died. The woman was sitting outside her home when a bullet that was obviously intended for someone else struck her and killed her. 26-year-old Megan Dodo, shot in the face. She was pronounced dead just after noon on that day, and the baby was delivered via emergency C-section, and the baby has now died. The mother, Megan Dodo, was scheduled to give birth on October 16th. October 15th, she had recently posted on a social media site. So the baby was a month early, and the baby didn't survive. This article never mentions the father, so I don't know why. I think that's the state of things now, is that typically there isn't a father involved in a young woman who's pregnant, or at least not actively involved. Certainly not worth reporting on. Certainly no one she was married to. That's sad. On top of the utter devastation of the murder of this woman and the death, the murder of her child. But the authors and editors at Philly.com do call the child a baby. They call it a baby several times throughout the article. And I wonder why they do that. I mean, if there had been an abortionist involved, they certainly wouldn't have called it a baby throughout the report. Had there been someone obviously accountable for having killed this fetus, they probably wouldn't have called it a baby throughout the article. But since there's no abortionist, and there's no one who's under arrest, and there's probably no law in Germany that would have protected this baby, or made it a crime to kill this baby. So they call it a baby. Anyway, just awful and sad. Awful and sad. Finally, from the Washington Examiner, the nation's marriage rate in the United States of America is at its lowest level since 1920, they report. The marriage rate has bottomed out at 50.3%. Yeah, that's for 2013, the last year for which we have data. So just over half of Americans are married anymore. And they say that's the lowest point since 1920. That's a bit misleading. 1920 was just the first year mentioned, that they mentioned that in the census, where they started keeping track of the marriage rate. Back, and at that time, it was 65%, and marriage hit a high of almost 70, a little over 72% in 1960, which was probably the height of America's glory, you know, 1960, before everything started coming down, man. So, marriage is at an all-time low, as long as we've been counting, even when you count the homos, which they decided to do this time. So they say there's only 182,000 homos married, and that's not enough, compared with 56 million normal couples, and yet they get all the press. All right, that's it. That's the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Theology Online, kgov.com, my other brother there who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, and American Right to Life. And should the Lord tarry, I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.